Today's episode of Beyond the Mask is presented by the team at CRNA Financial Planning. Get a free consultation today to be guided through the complexities of investing and financial planning. Just visit crnafinancialplanning.com. Beyond the Mask is also sponsored by crnaeducation.com. CRNAs, you can get the CE credits you need by just going to crnaeducation.com. They have over 100 AANA prior approved credits, all four core CPC modules, and even over 40 pharmacology credits. No subscriptions, it's all online and mobile friendly. Just go to crnaeducation.com. And don't forget, listening to our podcast can earn you Class B credits. For more information on how you can submit them, check out our CE credit tab on our website, beyondthemaskpodcast.com. Welcome to the Beyond the Mask podcast. This is the Anesthesia Alchemy Edition, Terry and Gary Unplugged. Join hosts Gary Bridges and Terry Wicks as they deep dive into today's most important clinical conversations in a unique but educational way, in a humorous balance that only they can achieve. Let today's journey begin. Here are Terry and Gary with your next installment of Anesthesia Alchemy.
3, 2, 1.
Well, hello, Gary, my old friend. Boy, things have changed in the last few years since you and I started giving anesthesia way back in the dark ages, you know, when there was only two channels on TV. Heck, I remember when I found out we were going to get a third channel. I couldn't believe it. Wow, three channels. That on our old black and white TV, rabbit ears and all. It was really something else.
UHF.
Number 12 on your dial. You know, we've seen a lot of things change in the last few years. We got better anesthesia machines, better muscle relaxants, better volatile inhalation agents. We got medications that really can diminish postoperative nausea and vomiting without putting people up on Pluto. And, you know, we've got better monitors. You know, we can do real-time ST segment depression analysis, monitor end-tidal CO2, and saturation of hemoglobin in real time, and we can even do video laryngoscopy. And I'm not just talking about an old Bullard scope either. I'm talking about real video.
That's going back there.
And we got ultrasound for, you know, vascular access and doing regional blocks. And, you know, all of these things combined make anesthesia safer for our patients and make our jobs easier as clinicians, too.
That's right, Terry. You know, things sure really have changed over the years, or the decades, if you will. Do you remember when we had EKGs that were, it was like an oscilloscope? And it was, do you remember that one? That was crazy.
Being in a submarine.
That's right. Well, even when we were looking at end-tidal CO2, when it was on the, you know, it would shift from room to room. I mean, it was not real time, right?
Yeah, the CERA system,
Well, let's even go back a little bit further. Do you remember the hand cranks and the foot pedals to adjust the OR bed height and angle?
Oh, boy, do I ever. Hey, listen, you could get a pretty good workout trying to keep up with orthopedic surgeons. Hey, can you roll this thing to me? Hey, roll away from me, Terry. Hey, put the bed down. Now back up. Oh, that's almost right. Hey, how about a little T-berg? Oh, wait, that might be too much. Head up just a little bit. And hey, can we get the arms out a little bit? Thanks. Do you mind turning the music up a little bit? By the time you're ready to see if you couldn't grab a Coker and wake him up. You know, that was just during draping the patient.
Yeah.
And, you know, other things have changed, Gary. You know, we think about the way we ventilate our patients in the operating room. And way back when I first started out, we used to use high tidal volumes when we're ventilating our patients. You know, we're talking 10, 12 milliliters per kilogram of body weight. And we almost never added a positive end expiratory pressure to the system. And even we had those PEEP valves, and Lord help you, put that on the wrong limb. You know, we never did alveolar recruitment maneuvers, maybe once in a while at the end, but doggone, what were we thinking?
Yeah, you know, we probably thought we were actually doing the right thing. At least there was what we were taught traditionally. You know, a couple of weeks ago, you and I were talking a little bit about lung protective ventilation strategies. You know, and I think we really should take some time today and talk to our listeners about ways to reduce postoperative pulmonary complications, because it is a big problem. You know, one of the ways to do that is take advantage of all the sophisticated features that, you know, that are really included in our modern day operating room ventilators or anesthesia machines. It wasn't that long ago when we could only control gas flows and tidal volumes delivered by the actual ventilating system. You know, and if we wanted to actually add positive end expiratory pressures, we had to either use PEEP valves or add PEEP valves actually to the system, or if it was even available, we'd have to adjust the PEEP manually. But our new machines, anesthesia gas machines, the ventilator components now allow us not only to control the fresh gas flows and gases, but it limits peak pressures. It adds PEEP to the system for us, and it provides recruitment maneuvers and uses pressure control or volume control. And many ventilators can actually detect respiratory efforts by patients and support the patient's spontaneous respiratory efforts, whether that's through pressure support or a myriad of other modalities that's actually available on the machines nowadays. It's just great. You know, most contemporary ventilators can be even display your pressure volume loops and have a wide array of other sophisticated functions. You know, yesterday I watched a video on YouTube, and we're going to include that in the reference list, but it does advertise that anesthesia machines can actually autonomously self-adjust to maintain a target end tidal oxygen and anesthetic gas concentration. You know, when you're using things like low fresh gas flows, and you know, Terry, things have really changed, because I mean, these are the things that we're using, you know, on our machines where I'm practicing today, and I'll tell you, when you can see that patient starting to get some of their muscle strength back, they start to nibble, you know, a little bit, and you can watch this now real time, unlike back in the days of the old ascending bellows. And that's not just an accordion, right?
Oh, no, it's not. You know, for us older fellows, it's a little technologically challenged. You know, paying for a latte with my telephone is a little bit of a challenge. But, you know, there's a lot of technology that's been engineered into contemporary machines in the operating room and the ventilators that help us take better care of our patients. And I think we can pretty confidently say that lung protective ventilation, we're going to get into the details, truly does benefit patients in the intensive care unit. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But one of the questions that, you know, comes up periodically is, does it really make a difference in the operating room where, you know, we only mechanically ventilate our patients for, you know, maybe an hour or two, or even during a long case, 4 or 5 hours? You know, and even though we take care of a lot of very sick patients during surgery, most of our patients are relatively healthy otherwise. And, you know, so the question is, does it make a difference in the OR?
Yeah. You know, here we go, Terry. It looks like we're going to have to get into some of the published literature again to help us decide which is the best way to take care of our patients in the operating room. So let's look at a few studies that have been published recently and, you know, kind of focus a little bit on the tidal volumes, the peak pressures, the positive and expiratory pressure, PEEP, recruitment maneuvers, and even a relatively new concept for those of us that have been in the business for a while, something known as driving pressure. Hopefully after looking at some scientifically sound studies and reviews of lung protective ventilation, and obviously translating that to patient outcomes, we can make some more confident recommendations about how to best ventilate our patients in the operating room, you know, and reduce things like postoperative pulmonary complications, because it's something that's real that if we're not following up on our patients, we would actually never even appreciate it. So Terry, maybe the best place to start for our listeners here today is to define what elements actually compromise lung protective ventilation and talk about how ventilation dynamic affects pulmonary physiology.
Yeah, that's a good place to start. So let's start by pulling out a few terms to define, and that way we'll make sure that we're all on the same page. And, you know, one of the most important terms to understand is atelectasis. And, you know, I think most of us in anesthesia understand that atelectasis is simply the collapse of alveoli. And that occurs almost uniformly when we put people to sleep. And it also happens when we underventilate alveoli or when our gas mixture allows the absorption of gas and lets those alveoli collapse. And that's particularly a problem when you have slow filling or emptying alveoli that don't communicate with the fresh gas flow very well. When we put our patients in the supine position, and maybe when if we interrupt their spontaneous negative pressure patient-initiated ventilation, some of those alveoli are going to close up. And when that happens, gas change is impaired. We lose functional residual capacity and have maldistribution of ventilation. And that's not good. And when those alveoli are repeatedly collapsed and re-expanded, it causes inflammation within them. And, you know, we can talk about cytokines and chemokines and all kinds of magic stuff. But, you know, basically that's very harmful to those alveoli. Another couple of things we need to just maybe, you know, put in our hat are volume trauma and barotrauma. And volume trauma, as the name suggests, occurs when the alveoli are overdistended. And barotrauma occurs when those alveoli are exposed to high pressures to re-expand them. And, you know, any of these insults can lead to, you know, pretty significant inflammatory processes and injury the epithelium of the alveolus. And, of course, that epithelium is pretty important because that's where the good gas goes in and the bad gas goes out. So, you know, and driving pressure maybe is a good one to talk about because that's kind of a more contemporary concept, and it really is the difference between the plateau pressure, which is the highest pressure that the alveolus or the airway is exposed to, and the PEEP, or the positive end expiratory. This is a simple mathematical equation where you subtract one from the other. And that's a pretty basic start, but that'll help our listeners to kind of understand what we're talking about when we just start defining lung protective ventilation.
Yeah, and just a little aside, that atelectotrauma, which actually occurs when your alveoli are repeatedly collapsed and re-expand, it kind of reminds me of the first car I had, which was a standard.
I still have one like that.
Yeah. Let off on the clutch. I'm getting atelectotrauma here. But, you know, let's talk a little bit about lung protective ventilation. Using low tidal volumes, so lung protective ventilation, we'll just acronym LPV, tidal volumes, they really should be calculated based on the patient's ideal body weight and usually somewhere around 6 to 8 millimeters per kilo of ideal body weight. Now, I'll tell you, recently, some of my patients' ideal is about 50 kilos, but the wrapping around that ideal body is another 100 kilos. So,
yeah,
you know, it bears to mind, you know, sometimes 6 to 8 may not be enough over the duration of the case. I still would start out at 6 to 8, but you will watch that CO2 creep up. And then we'll talk a little bit later about lung recruitment mechanisms or maneuvers, because that's as important too. Another important element of lung protective ventilation is the implementation of positive end expiratory pressure, or PEEP. When end expiratory pressure is increased, the driving pressure does decrease. So driving pressure seemed to be the key here because, you know, there's in a study by Duval et al., they found that driving pressure greater than 16 centimeters of water was actually associated with a decrease in oxygen saturation divided by the FiO2 ratios. And so that led to an increase in postoperative pulmonary complications and actually translates to higher mortality. So it's not something we would see immediately, but a lot of these studies look out to, 30, 60, 90 days out to a year. So it does have some consequences. We will talk about how these strategies can actually help reduce postoperative pulmonary complications. But first, let's include the last piece of our puzzle, and that is alveolar recruitment, which I talked about a little bit. Now, alveolar recruitment really helps to re-expand those collapsed alveoli or atelectotrauma, and it does increase gas exchange. And you will see that on the machine over time, you know, and it might only be an hour, depending on the size of the patient, that wrapping around the ideal body does put a little bit of pressure and a little bit of weight. And so it's going to take a little bit more pressure to expand those lungs. And so the ideal, obviously, is increasing gas exchange or optimizing it, restoring that functional residual capacity. Now that's getting back into the pulmonary mechanics. And ultimately what that does is improves oxygenation. These things all together are what is included in what we would define as lung protective ventilation. Now, Terry, do we get ahead of ourselves by not defining the magnitude of the problem that we're talking about?
What, you and I get ahead of ourselves? I can't believe that.
No, there's no way.
we might have, but you know, when we consider that, you know, there's probably 300 million surgical procedures performed every year. Pulmonary postoperative complications turn out to be one of the leading causes of mortality and morbidity in postoperative period. So it is a big deal. So besides making patients feel bad, you know, it really adds expense to the system, taking care of these folks in the ICU and so forth. those pulmonary complications postoperatively increase the patient's length of stay. You know, the risk of pneumonia goes up, acute respiratory failure can happen, hypoxemia, and all of these things lead to poor patient outcomes and increase healthcare costs significantly. So those things tally up to about $3.5 billion yearly added to the healthcare system. And, you know, even in the anesthesia community, $3.5 billion, you know, starts to make get your attention.
That's just another 10 CRNAs, isn't it?
you could almost fund a critical access hospital's anesthesia department with that kind of money. But some things about postoperative pulmonary complications are not modifiable. We know that. And you talked a little bit about patients that have kind of pushed past that barrier of their ideal body weight. So body habitus, things like history of obstructive sleep apnea and COPD, and, you know, and even some surgical procedures themselves can contribute to postoperative pulmonary complications as well. But including lung protective ventilation really can help diminish those complications. And that's what we're going to talk about next.
Hey CRNAs, it's time to simplify your continuing education. Welcome to CRNAeducation.com, your trusted provider for CPC core modules and a plethora of Class A CE credits. You can explore 43 detailed articles covering various anesthesia topics, all from your favorite device, anytime, anywhere. And with over 40 pharmacology CE credits, meet your state board requirements effortlessly. Whether you need a few credits or everything to recertify, we have what you need. Just complete your credits online without any subscriptions or recurring charges. You can trust in our 100% CRNA-owned platform, established in 2011, ensuring you receive the best in customer service and educational content. Ready to learn? Go to CRNAeducation.com. Making continuing education easy and accessible. And don't forget that support is always a quick email or a text or phone call away. To sign up and learn more, just go to crnaeducation.com.
Let's take a look at some of the data, all right? So we're going to back up a little bit, get into some of that literature. So in 2015, that's almost 10 years ago now, right? Guldner et al. Published a review in Anesthesiology reviewing the role of tidal volume, PEEP, or positive end pressure, expiratory pressure rather, lung recruitment maneuvers to determine if these interventions actually influenced postoperative pulmonary complications. Now, one of the challenges the authors actually did identify in the study is defining what actually is included in the category of what we would classify as postoperative pulmonary complications. And it could include things like unplanned or prolonged mechanical ventilation, hypoxemia, atelectasis, or bronchospasm. Also, things like pleural effusions, pneumothorax, ventilation depression, or ventilatory depression, aspiration pneumonitis. So it's a whole catalog of complications. Another challenge is identifying, you know, specific risk factors that are associated with postoperative pulmonary conditions or complications. And the authors here also point out very eloquently, I must add, that at least 50% of the risk factors are directly related to the patient's health. So something that we can't control, typically, like modifiable things, right? Certainly in the acute stage of when we're managing these patients. So, you know, you really have to consider things like gender, ASA class of the patient. It's a crude guide. It's not a one and done. And whether or not they have things like comorbidities like COPD, congestive heart failure, whether they're smokers, and all of those things in considerations of the type of surgery also, whether we're having thoracic surgery or cardiac surgery, or whether we're having a long-lasting surgical procedure that's, let's say, beyond 2 hours. So, you know, it starts to get really complicated controlling all of these variables, some modifiable, some not modifiable. And one of the things the authors in this review actually did say, and it's actually, you know, in my opinion is pretty helpful, is that they actually discuss the mechanisms of lung injury involved with things like barotrauma, volume trauma, and the effect of alveolar collapse and reinflation at the actual tissue level. So it was kind of intriguing.
You know, this is almost sounds like science. Yeah, so you know, the authors are pretty good. They were quick to point out that atelectasis occurs in as many as 90% of the patients undergoing anesthesia. And honestly, we stress this a lot with our students. We tell them, when you lay somebody down and paralyze them, their lungs are gonna, you're gonna have some alveolar collapse.
And it's like putty.
And the causes contribute to atelectasis include, collapse of small airways, absorption of intraalveolar gas, compression of lung structures from the outside, and even, kind of crazily, even impairment of surfactant production, which, and that's a whole nother topic. We'll start talking physics.
Woo-hoo. Oh, my God. Get down with Joe Konuski. He'll have this lung tissue and all the parameters and blah, 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 all the sticking pressures.
Yeah, surface tension and all that kind of stuff. The law of Laplace.
That's, God, no.
So, even though they point out that tidal volumes as high as 10 mLs per kilo have been used safely in healthy patients in the past, there's pretty good evidence that tidal volumes as low as 4 or 5 mLs per kilo body weight combined with a little bit of PEEP are able to maintain good gas exchange and respiratory system compliance during open abdominal procedures. Now, a pretty interesting finding, Gary. What else did the authors say about positive end expiratory pressure and the prevention of atelectasis?
Yeah, this was kind of surprising, Terry. They did say that it does require PEEP of at least 10 centimeters of water pressure to reduce or eliminate atelectasis. 10, that's, most of the time we were putting...
That's a good number.
It is. 2.5 to 5, we're like, okay, if we start going over 5, we start raising our awareness as to shunting and stuff like that. But, positive or PEEP, positive end expiratory pressure, is really most effective if it is preceded by lung recruitment maneuvers. And those recruitment maneuvers must be high enough to overcome the opening pressures of the airways, which can be as high as 40 centimeters of water pressure in the non-obese, I stress, the non-obese patient, and even higher in our obese patients. So fortunately, contemporary anesthesia ventilators and machines have the ability to deliver recruitment maneuvers through the system without interrupting ventilation and or losing the benefit of those recruitment maneuvers when we switch back to mechanical ventilation from manually delivered recruitment maneuvers. Ultimately, the authors suggest that low tidal volumes may be beneficial when delivered in that range of 6 to 8 cc's or milliliters per kilo of body weight, and adding moderate levels of PEEP somewhere in the range of 6 to 8 centimeters of water pressure. And they also recommend adding periodic recruitment maneuvers somewhere around every 30 minutes. So that will actually help reduce postoperative pulmonary complications. But let's remember, this review was published nearly 10 years ago. And we know what happens after the research is out there for 10 years, there's a new shift, right? So we should really consider what more recent reviews and research has shown about lung protective ventilation. Let's jump forward with that just a little bit, Terry.
Yes. It almost sounds like we need to pay attention to what's going on in the OR.
And literature.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah, you're right. So that's a good start, though. So let's look at something that's a little bit more current. In 2020, Dang, that's a great name. Dang, his or her colleagues, they published a really nice meta-analysis in the British Journal of Anesthesia. And, when I was a student, I was told that anesthesia analgesia, Canadian Journal, British Journal of Anesthesia, and Anesthesiology were probably the premier physician-published journals. So British Journal, that's a good one.
Yep.
And they found some pretty interesting results in their meta-analysis. And they looked at 34 selected studies that included, 5,273 patients who had received either conventional mechanical ventilation, the old-fashioned way, or ventilation with low tidal volumes plus PEEP at around 4 centimeters or low tidal volumes. They did a lot of different stuff. So I'm going to pay attention here, folks. This can get away from you. So they did low levels of PEEP, less than 4 centimeters of water pressure, plus recruitment maneuvers, low tidal volumes, plus moderate levels of PEEP to around 5 to 8 centimeters of water pressure, and low tidal volumes, less than 8 milliliters per kilo, plus moderate PEEP. I'm starting to get out of breath here myself. Plus recruitment maneuvers and low tidal volumes of less than 8 milliliters per kilogram plus high PEEP, and then greater than 9 centimeters of water pressure plus recruitment maneuvers. So if you can keep track of that, I recommend that you go take a look at our references at the end and get that squared away, because I just said a lot of stuff. I think if I lost track. What year is this, by the way? So anyway,
2020.
Obviously, they looked at a lot of different elements of ventilation, looking at a lot of different ventilator settings to include various tidal volumes, levels of PEEP, and so forth, and the whether or not the providers added recruit maneuvers. I can't believe this. Anyway, so it was a pretty robust meta-analysis, and of course, of importance, they do follow the PRISMA guidelines, which those of us in academia are familiar with. And those PRISMA guidelines really create an important framework for recording, reporting systematic reviews and meta-analysis to make sure that we have good data coming out of those particular academic exercises. So I won't go out into the weeds, but the PRISMA does ensure that there's consistency in the development and publication of these kinds of reports. Phew, Gary, I'm about out of breath. Why don't you tell our listeners what they concluded from all of this stuff?
Well, absolutely. Terry, you go ahead and do a couple recruitment maneuvers yourself. And we'll cut right to the chase before everybody goes to sleep. You know, I think I can summarize in just a few sentences. You know, what they determined was that low tidal volumes and moderate to high PEEP, with or without recruitment maneuvers, actually reduces the risk of postoperative pulmonary complications. Also, and similarly, the results actually showed that low tidal volumes and moderate to high PEEP with recruitment maneuvers was associated with reduced risk of atelectasis. So that's good. And finally, they found that low tidal volumes and moderate PEEP without recruitment maneuvers was superior to conventional mechanical ventilation in reducing the risk of pneumonia postoperatively. Now, those are pretty interesting findings, and interesting enough, they also found that there was really no difference among the groups in the incidence of acute respiratory distress syndrome or short-term mortality. So, just a quick couple of observations there. The authors also opined that low tidal volumes were probably the most important of all the elements of lung protective ventilation that they actually evaluated in this study. And interestingly, they suggest that PEEP as high as 12 centimeters of water pressure. Yes, for those of us that have been doing this for a while, 12 centimeters of water pressure actually helped to reduce the repetitive lung overdistension and release of those inflammatory cytokines, which contribute to the development of ventilation-induced lung injury. You know, we're also now finding out that cytokines and pro-inflammatory mediators play a really big role in a lot of the immune and inflammation-related pathology. And incidentally, you know, for some that are thinking, well, 12 centimeters of PEEP, that's not too bad. And just to kind of go over a little bit of the physiology with that. So how does that work? Why is that a problem? Well, when you overdistend those alveoli and all the microvasculature that's around the alveoli, what happens to the blood when that flow is impeded? It goes all the way back to the right side of the heart and it starts to congest. And if it's left long enough, what happens? The right ventricle then gets distended. It then bulges in, the intraventricular septum bulges into the left ventricle, thereby decreasing the size of the chamber of the left ventricle. And hence your stroke volume goes way down and you would see low blood pressure with a high PEEP. You better pull that PEEP off. Right?
Yeah. Yep. That old right side of the heart's not very resilient.
That's correct.
Does not tolerate acute increases in right pulmonary atrial pressure.
Not at all.
For sure. Yeah.
And certainly when we do lung recruitment mechanisms, you'll actually see that exaggerated because not only will the pressure drop, but you'll also get some bradycardic because of the stretch on the ventricle. So Terry, important to point out some of the pulmonary complications maybe going forward here that might actually be patient-specific, if you will.
I want to emphasize, in most circumstances, healthy patients tend to do well even without the application of lung protective ventilation because, you know, healthy patients just tend to do well. That's, unfortunately, they don't show up in the OR very often. A good study published in Anesthesiology back in October 22 by Turan and colleagues that showed that a variety of orthopedic patients did well with low tidal volumes and relatively low levels of PEEP without developing significant differences in their SpO2 FiO2 ratios. And, you know, you just look at their oxygen saturation and divide it by their FiO2, and it should be, you know, 300 to 600. It should be the number. But anyway, that reflects the efficiency of oxygenation. And so these patients were mostly in their pretty early 60s, and their cases lasted on average about 215 minutes, which may seem like a long time, but you know, I think if you look at the whole landscape of surgeries being done, that's about average. On the other hand, it's pretty well demonstrated that critically ill patients, and that's different than healthy patients, and particularly those in the intensive care units, the lower tidal volumes plus a little bit of PEEP and recruitment maneuvers probably, you know, significantly reduce pulmonary complications. And those patients, conventional mechanical ventilation is associated with increased mortality, increased length of stay, and maybe even increase in folks that need to readmit to the ICU. So the underlying health of the patient is really an important consideration when we're thinking about lung protective ventilation.
You know, you're right, Terry. Ball and colleagues actually looked at various lung protective strategies and published a really nice review in 2022 that looked at the use of preoperative physiotherapy in CPAP. And what they actually found in that study was that preoperative physiotherapy actually reduced the incidence of PPCs, and the use of CPAP preoperatively actually improved oxygenation. And they actually recommended CPAP use preoperatively and at induction, which was interesting, particularly in the obese patients, right? So we get those patients in there. That's the first thing that should be going on really is the face mask and getting them breathing. Yeah. But we could add some CPAP while they're, you know, you put the little strap on the face mask and get them breathing well and positioned well. It's not a leap of faith to suggest that those obese patients may have been at a little higher risk for obstructive sleep apnea or even obesity hypoventilation syndrome. So interestingly, Ball and colleagues didn't really see a huge benefit or detriment to minor variations in tidal volume and PEEP. So overall, some pretty interesting stuff. There's a little bit of an eye opener that may not be mainstream for us.
You know, I don't think we oftentimes put that mask on the face and, you know, turn up the APL and, you know, keep a little positive pressure. And you know, that's, but it's something that's pretty simple and would be easy to do if you had a good tight mask fit. You know, those old, remember those old black?
Yes, that's one. Yes. Stuff?
Wow.
Yes. They
maybe
work wonders.
Would help. Wow. Yeah. Back in the day, we were doing mask ventilations on a 5-hour lap Coley.
Yeah.
A good hand by mask. That'd be good for you. Make your hand strong.
That's right. Anyway. Strong handshakes.
Today's show is brought to you by the folks at CRNA Financial Planning, an independent consulting firm that offers financial planning services exclusively to CRNAs and their families. From planning for a child's future college expenses to building a predictable income stream in retirement, the firm is committed to offering you comprehensive financial services customized to fit your unique needs and objectives. If you have questions about your financial future, get them answered. Call the team at 855-304-3748. That's 855-304-3748. Or go online to crnafinancialplanning.com.
So the final concept we need to probably take a few minutes to talk about is mechanical power. Now, this is something that has really kind of bubbled to the surface maybe in the last year or two. And the concept of mechanical power as it relates to mechanical ventilation is pretty new, as I was saying. Now, I'm not a physicist. I didn't do great in physics, although I do remember that force equals mass times acceleration. But the essential concept is that mechanical power delivered during ventilation can be calculated by combining the factors like respiratory rate, tidal volume, the level of PEEP, plateau pressure. And so it's not a long drawn out equation, but it does help us to quantify the mechanical force that's communicated to the lung tissue during ventilation. The author's conclusions in this study were pretty straightforward and logical when you think about it. And they simply said that the higher the mechanical power delivered to the respiratory system during ventilation, the more likely a postoperative pulmonary complication requiring reintubation could occur. So, wow, that's something to think about. That's something to pull
out. Absolutely.
Hang on here. I mean, pull out the calculator here and decide what the heck I'm doing.
I'm going to do a little four-year analysis and graph it out.
Area under the curve and receiver operator.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Maybe. Yeah. Hey, so, Gary, what can we draw from all this stuff? We've talked about a lot of things.
Yeah, Terry, I think it's safe to say that using moderate levels of PEEP using lower tidal volumes and really limiting that driving pressure during mechanical ventilation, particularly in the high-risk patients, can actually convey a significant benefit to those patients and reduce the frequency of postoperative pulmonary complications. Really important stuff because, you know, many times we really underappreciate it because we're not following that patient out to 3, 4, 5, 6 days, whatever, or following up at home. And
that's right.
Those postoperative pulmonary complications actually, you know, if they happen in hospital, they actually increase patients' length of stay or return back to the hospital. And it does increase morbidity and mortality that go along with those postoperative pulmonary complications, along with dramatically increasing the cost to the healthcare system. You know, and it seems to be that it's a combination of factors, right? It's not cut and dry. So including things that influence tidal volume, peak inspiratory pressure, and PEEP, rather than any one single factor on its own, combined to deliver with mechanical energy to the respiratory system. So in totality, it is the mechanical energy that's delivered to the respiratory system that is likely to be the source of injury associated with things like atelectasis, hypoxemia, and inflammation, something that we, I think, don't appreciate for the most part.
Bigger deal than we usually thought about.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, now that we've seen with COVID, now we really see how that messes up the lung tissue.
That was an eye-opener.
Oh, yeah. You know, but our challenge, obviously, as anesthesia providers is really adopting those lung protective strategies to deliver the best care and produce the best outcomes for our patients to mitigate any of those postoperative pulmonary complications and hopefully put them on a road or a pathway to exceptional recovery after their surgical intervention.
And, you know, generate some revenue keep those critical access hospitals rolling.
Absolutely.
Ooh, Gary, I couldn't agree more. You know, boy, you know, things have changed. Anesthesia's gotten more complicated and research has given us a lot to think about. And even today. But the good news is we have better medications. We have better monitors and give us more precise information in real time. And we have the technology available to us to make our work easier. And of course, that translates to better patient experiences and safer anesthesia. So that's about a wrap, ladies and gentlemen. Get out there and put those lung protective ventilatory strategies to work. Take us home, Gary.
All right. Well, thank you, Terry. You know, it's been, we've gone through a lot today, and certainly the conventional anesthesia machines that we have in our clinical practices have a lot of really good functions and features for us to really optimize mechanical ventilation of our patients and provide a whole range of safety nets to make sure that they don't succumb to postoperative pulmonary complications as we've discussed today. Certainly, you know, at least in my experience, and we use some of the more advanced ones in our clinical practice, folks, you need to be using as many of those features as you possibly can, because they not only do they help provide better care in the recovery or postoperative phase, but you're able to really finesse your anesthetic intraoperatively. You know, you will see patients start to desat, especially the ones with a BMI. And I put it around 35 is what I've noticed, BMI 35 and upwards, that when you're running those low tidal volumes, you do need to provide recruitment maneuvers. And I find myself pulling them off the machine and giving manual breaths to recruit maybe about once every couple of hours. You know, and also with that, you can see when patients are starting to get full muscle control, or at least portions of it, because they'll nibble at that tube and you can watch that. And that's where you'll start to see peak inspiratory pressure start to go up. And so it's really nice to use your pressure volume loops, get comfortable with those. Certainly, patients with comorbidities like obstructive disorders like COPD, it all presents itself so well, not just your end-tidal CO2, but your pulmonary mechanics. So yeah, I know we've talked a lot today about some of the science of lung protection, and it is critical since we are the airway experts. So we encourage you to go online, take a look at those references. We got some great references for this podcast. Pull a few of those down, and especially the more recent ones. because as we did allude to, 10 years actually did make a difference with all the newer technologies that are improving on our anesthesia machines. And those newer features are a godsend, quite honestly. With that, folks, thank you for listening to today's podcast. We want to encourage every single one of you to go to our podcasts, give us a like, share it with some colleagues, share it with some family members, friends, whoever may have an interest in this area of anesthesia, and then leave us a comment. If you want some specific podcast for us to present, we are more than happy. Just sign in, let us know, leave us a comment, leave us a like, and we will see you on the next episode.
Yes, sir. Adios.
Hi, this is Jackie Rolls, president of the International Federation of Nurse Anesthetists and president and founder of Our Hearts, Your Hands, a global anesthesia support community that takes donations to allow nurse anesthetists in low and middle income countries to go to educational programs, buy equipment, or textbooks. Your donations are tax deductible, and we would appreciate your support.
Be sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and anywhere you like to listen to shows. Also, be sure to check out beyondthemaskpodcast.com. Each episode is posted there with a corresponding blog post, and we timestamp important parts of the episode to help you quickly get to the content you're looking for. Also, check out the special series section on the site. You can follow along and catch up on the CRNA History Series, episodes specifically about political conversations in the industry, or try the CRNA Personal Finance Series. It's all on beyondthemaskpodcast.com. And if you have a question for the show or want to be a guest or even suggest a particular topic, fill out the contact form on the site or send an email directly to us at info@beyondthemaskpodcast.com. And lastly, let's take the conversation social. Check out our Beyond the Mask podcast Facebook page and Facebook group.